special episode of The Writer's Way, Writing Our History, Legendary SSU, a Write Attitude radio show. The Write Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative that enhances student learning by fostering positive attitudes towards writing. This program is brought to you by the Office of the Quality Enhancement Plan. I'm your host, Sierra Walton. This year marks Savannah State's 125th anniversary, and so we look back at our legendary history and consider the important role of writing to both preserve and honor this history. For our show today, we will share student and staff writing and performances, interviews with faculty and staff, and a reading of John Greenleaf Whittier's poem, Howard at Atlanta, which immortalized a message from a young boy, a freed slave, to the people of the North, "Tell them we are rising." The boy was SSU's first president, Major Richard R. Wright, Sr., and the message has become a symbol of Savannah State's mission as an institution of higher learning. From our first president to our current and first female president, Dr. Cheryl Davenport Dozier, we celebrate 125 legendary years of history at Savannah State University. To kick off our show, we'll first play an excerpt from an essay by SSU alumna and assistant to the Office of the President, Sonia Compton, who in 2014 won first place in the QEP's Oh Freedom Writing Contest. In the essay, Compton describes the history behind National Freedom Day, and in particular the life of Major Richard R. Wright and his role in the establishment of the February 1st holiday honoring freedom across America and the signing of the 13th Amendment. Compton's essay is a valuable example of the importance of writing and reflecting on where we've been and where we have yet to go.
Richard Robert Wright was a tiger. You can get anywhere from here. And he did. Wright, born in the South near Dalton, Georgia in 1855 to enslaved parents, made tireless journeys by foot, traveling over 200 miles in pursuit of advancing his life and education. He saw no limitations. Wright's ambition shined through at a very young age. During a visit by the Commissioner Oliver Otis Howard of the Freedmen's Bureau to his high school in 1868, General Howard asked, "What message would you like him to deliver to the children up north?" The then 12-year-old Wright stood up and stated, "Sir, tell them we are rising." This phrase became the anthem for the post-war black middle class and has since been memorialized in the 1869 poem written by John Greenleaf Whittier's Howard to Atlanta. And I will read an insert. "Who hears can never fear or doubt you. What shall I tell the children up north about you? Then ran around a whisper, a murmur, some answer devising. A little boy stood up, 'General, tell him we are rising.'" Making this his self-made mantra, little Richard Robert Wright rose. Wright went on to receive various accomplishments, recognitions, and accolades, some of which include one of the first graduates of the Atlanta University and valedictorian receiving his Bachelor's of Arts. He was also the principal of Howard Normal School as well as the Ware High School. He founded the first Association of African American Teachers and was selected by the Georgia Legislature to head the Georgia State Industrial College in Savannah, Georgia. He was also appointed to the U.S. Army Paymaster with the rank of Major during the Spanish-American War. His longest stint, however, was in the South, where he played a very active role as the principal of the Georgia State Industrial College in Savannah, Georgia, now known as Savannah State University. He served 30 long years at Savannah State and developed one of the first state-supported institutions for higher education of African Americans in the South. It is because of him we, the Savannah State Tigers, are rising. Major Wright resigned as principal of the college and at the age of 67 left the South to continue what may be considered his greatest pursuit in Rise. Newfound motivation saw Major Wright moving to the city of Philadelphia, where he was determined to open his own bank. So said, so done. Wright was determined to establish an enterprise where all persons, regardless of race or creed, were treated with fairness and respect. He also saw the ideal opportunity to improve the social and economic opportunities available to Black Philadelphians. Once again, Wright did not give in to the oppression or the limitations of his time. He learned to negotiate a perilous racial terrain. During the years of the Great Depression, Wright's bank, the Citizens and Southern Bank and Trust Company of Philadelphia, was among the 16 banks nationwide to absorb the effects of economic decline that swept through the country. He was again rewarded and recognized for his magnanimous efforts, eventually receiving Philadelphia's highest award for distinguished citizenship. As Wright continued his tremendous works in the historic city of Philadelphia, he was reminded of the 70th year of Negro emancipation. In 1933, emancipation celebrations were reignited in Philadelphia thanks to Major Wright. That same year, Wright organized a 70th anniversary celebration of Negro progress. By 1935, the event was receiving both national and international recognitions from persons including city officials, national Black leaders, and representatives from Haiti, a country with which he had established and promoted trade. After much lobbying for having a role of honor for which we, Black Americans, are not ashamed, and receiving much support from President Roosevelt and the First Lady, a commemorative postage stamp honoring Booker T. Washington, the first such honor of an African American, was much celebrated at the 1939 event. In these his final years, Richard Robert Wright emphasized and nationalized his ideal of the 13th Amendment being the door to our freedom. He believed that freedom was the cornerstone of our liberty. Wright, in his 80s, led the effort to create National Freedom Day in commemoration of the signing of the 13th Amendment by President Lincoln on the 1st of February, 1865. In 1941, Major Wright gathered national and local leaders to assemble in Philadelphia in order to formulate plans for having February 1st of each year recognized as National Freedom Day. The following year, 1942, Major Wright became the founder and president of the National Freedom Day Association. Wright was working in hopes of one freedom, and National Freedom Day would be the essence of promoting goodwill and harmonious cooperation among the citizens throughout the country. Wright believed in National Freedom Day, one freedom, which implies that all men are not only equally entitled to all freedoms, but, in practice, they must prove that our Declaration of Freedom includes all men. President Roosevelt supported the idea of a National Freedom Day, and in his 1943 letter to Major Wright, expressed that freedom was a movement that consecrates the maturing of the American democracy. It exemplifies the steady progress of our Negro citizens, that they have come a long way. A race which has achieved so much in a few years would go forward to even greater accomplishments in the years and generation ahead. Wright felt that the 13th Amendment should be celebrated because it can bring people together and it would prove utterly important with regards to national defense. He wanted to show that the Bill of Rights was a living thing. From 1940 until his death in 1947 at the age of 94, Major Wright expended all his energies on forming the necessary connections with congressmen and majors who supported and understood the importance of having a National Freedom Day. Although the National Freedom Day bill was defeated by Congress a few weeks after his death in 1947, the bill was reintroduced the following year in 1948. This time it swept through both the House and Senate Judiciary Committees. On June 30, 1948, the National Freedom Day Bill was signed into law by President Truman, making the following year and all years thereafter a national holiday. This commemoration represents what Major Wright spent near 91 years living, teaching, and fighting for: equality and justice for all men, freedom.
While Sonya Compton's essay offers important reminders about the life and accomplishments of Major Richard Wright, there exists still more legendary history in Savannah State's first 125 years. To help shed light on some of this history, we interviewed Ann Ogden, administrative assistant in the Asa H. Gordon Library, who works with the Savannah State University Special Collections. The SSU Special Collections offers a wealth of information, documents, photos, and artifacts from throughout the university's history. For those interested in writing or learning about history, you can find the Special Collections on the second floor of the SSU Library. But for now, enjoy this excerpt from our interview with Ms. Ogden, conducted by QEP Student Outreach Coordinator Kiera Lewis.
Good afternoon. My name is Kiera Lewis. I'm the Student Outreach Coordinator for the Office of the QEP, and today we have Ms. Ann Ogden here, who I will be interviewing. She's the Administrative Assistant in our Savannah State Library. How are you?
Great, thank you.
Good, good. So let's just go ahead and jump right in.
Okay.
All right, so can you give us a bit of an overview of the mission and importance of the SSU Archives, including some examples of what kind of things end up in the archives?
Okay, to start, I'd like to at least let you know that we recently had a name change.
Okay.
I will probably say archives as well, but we are now known as Special Collections.
Okay.
And the mission of the Savannah State University Special Collections is to preserve and protect the holdings of any of the historical documents pertinent to the university. These items could be artifacts, documents, or memorabilia. Just to name a few, we have like photographs, manuscripts, and one that comes to mind, I think about when I worked for one of the presidents, it's our 10th president, Dr. John T. Wolfe. We actually have a wind jacket that belonged to him that actually has his name engraved on it.
Okay.
And I wanted to just bring that up because, like I said, I had an opportunity to work in his office at the time. We also have a washing machine that I'm looking at over in that corner that we had during the time we had a home economics degree. I think it was way back in the 60s, and I think it was no longer a program here like in the early 80s. But when students come in to do a tour here, they look around and that's the first thing that seems to catch their attention, and they'll say, "Oh, what is that?" And so I have a little cheat sheet on the back of the washing machine that I listed everything that they thought that it was. And some of those things were like an ice cream maker, a cake batter machine, and even a cotton gin, just to name a few. So they really get a laugh out of that. And I guess the reason I like to do that because it encourages creative thinking with them to come in. And then most of the time, after the tour is over, they always say, "Oh, well, I had no idea you had so much stuff in here, and I got to come back when I have more time."
Right, right, right. Exactly. During my short visit in here yesterday, I was like, "Oh my gosh, I didn't even know this was here." So yeah, I can only imagine, how much of a creative thinker they became after seeing this special collection. So, moving along, one of the collections within the archives that is of particular interest is when well, considering, you know, SSU is celebrating their 125th anniversary, there's Richard R. Wright, his president's collection. So could you talk about some of the things that are included in this collection?
Well, you've actually mentioned one of my favorite collections. and that is, too, I guess, because it's so large and robust. And the reason that it's so large and robust as far as the materials, because in 1990, when the archives was first established here, and it was in Adams Hall, this was done by our first lady at the time, Dr. Dorothy Martin. Gardner Martin, okay, who now still works on the campus, she wanted to implement that for our 100th anniversary. Okay. And of course, now we're leading into our, already here at the 125th. But a lot of the administrative people that were on the board when that when it was developed, they went to Philadelphia, they actually met with Richard Wright's family, and they were able to give us a lot of the materials. They saw the need that it would be good for future research.
Okay, and so we know that, you know, Savannah State, you know, has changed a lot, you know, over these 125 years. So can you give us an idea of what things were like, you know, during this time period when Richard R. Wright was president?
Okay, first of all, we had many more trees. we have pictures here that can show you some of how the campus looked. We just, of course, didn't have as many buildings. The campus then was more like a farm.
Okay.
A lot of vegetation was raised on campus. They had cows, they had chickens, a lot of different farm animals. Actually, Savannah State University was the first black land grant campus, mm-hmm, within the state of Georgia. And the reason they did this as far as the crops and the animals, because this was self-sustaining for the students. The students actually ate off the campus and what they actually worked with this with their own hands. And the reason they did this as well, because a lot of the families could not afford to pay for tuition, room, and board. And something that comes to mind is the fact that in one of Richard Wright's documents, I kind of refer to it as his annual report, mm-hmm, he was noted as saying, he was expressing to the board that they couldn't afford more than $6 for room and board. And that was quite a strain on the students then. And now when I share it with students, they laugh.
Yeah.
And they think $6, but I'm thinking back then, that was a lot of money for, mm-hmm, the average family in the early 1900s.
Wow, $6. I know. I would laugh too, like I wish.
Yep, but hard to scrape up.
Yeah, I know. So that's really interesting. So you've worked at Savannah State under 9 different presidents, which is incredible. So with that experience, can you tell us about, you know, how you've seen Savannah State grow and changes over time?
Okay, sure. Just to give you a brief summary of all of the name changes that we've had,
yes,
from the university, we started out in 1890 as Georgia State Industrial College for Colored Youths. Then we later became Georgia State Industrial College, then Georgia State College, and then Savannah State College. And of course, now we're Savannah State University. I was working here, not doing all of those name changes, but during the time that it changed from college to university. And I think about the marine biology program in the early 80s. I said, that's a kind of different program. I just had no idea that it would even blossom into such a large global, mm-hmm, type program that it's become now. And then in the early 80s, the international program, they were just, I would say, a handful of students that may have been on campus. But of course now, we engage with so many countries all over the world on,
right,
a global scale. As far as athletics, at one point we were in the Division II status, and now we've come up to where we're actually in the Division I status.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think about Savannah State has kept up with a lot of the social changes. We've gotten to where we don't smoke on campus. You can't smoke in any of the buildings. And just on a personal note for me, I used to smoke, and I was actually allowed to smoke in the building, close to the administration, at my desk. But since then, I've kicked the habit. But it just makes me think how far we've come in the changes. And a lot of people like to know, we didn't have to pay to park.
Oh, I wish.
I had to get used to when it was time to buy a decal, so that's something new. And then I think about the dormitories. The students are now able to live in a co-ed type situation in the buildings. Mm-hmm. At that time, you know, they weren't able to do that. And then the last thing that I think about is the yearbooks. I think about the yearbooks. The last one that we had was in 1998, and a lot of students talk about they'd love to be able to see the yearbooks be brought mm-hmm. back.
That would be great. When I was here, I wanted to, you know,
see,
have a yearbook as well. But I don't know, maybe somebody will bring it back.
I keep telling the students, express it. You all can decide and get somebody to help spearhead it, and it can
right.
happen.
Wow. I've learned so much just throughout this conversation, so I'm very appreciative, and I'm honored to be, you know, retrieving all of this information. Was there anything else that you would like to share, or...
No, every time I have students to come or patrons, I always tell them you're visiting the best and the most favorite place on the campus because we have, like you say, all of the history and all of the resources
right.
of our heritage right here.
Right, exactly.
Makes it legendary.
Yes, we are legendary. So we just thank you so much, Ms. Ogden, for allowing us to conduct this interview today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate
much. It. Alrighty.
We just heard an interview with Ann Ogden about the SSU Special Collections and the history of Savannah State. Next, we blend the past with the present. Here is a recording of current SSU student and Student Government Association Vice President Enow Ayuk. He gives a performance as Major Richard Wright, delivering a speech about National Freedom Day and reminding us that Wright's words are as important today as they were in his time.
The purpose of National Freedom Day. It is hoped that we have found a happy medium in this anniversary celebration for the expression of our national devotion to the four freedoms. The adoption of National Freedom Day is based on the principle of national freedom. This principle implies that all men are not alone equally entitled to all the freedoms, but that in seeking to possess and to enjoy these freedoms, they must recognize the fact that they cannot attain the freedoms for themselves without sharing them with others. In practice, they must prove that all declaration of freedom includes all men. Thus, this celebration incidentally implements the fundamentals of good citizenship, which affirms and advocates that neither discrimination nor segregation should be tolerated in a free republic. That every step or act in such a direction is not only thoroughly inconsistent with freedom, but absolutely antagonistic to the peace, progress, and happiness of every citizen of our commonwealth. This is clearly demonstrated by our war. When every citizen of this republic is called upon to give his property, liberty, and even their life for the defense and safety of his country, in the battle for freedom, no one is exempt. Each must give his full measure. In times of extreme danger, all must work together to win victory. By this same token, all must unite in peace to create goodwill and to assure a happy and prosperous people. Therefore, in peace or in war, the National Freedom Day celebration will strive to promote goodwill and harmonious cooperation among all citizens of our land. Our eagerness for national freedom should warrant equal opportunity to all citizens. To call this purpose constantly and forcefully to the attention of the nation, we have organized to celebrate annually National Freedom Day. February 1st, on the anniversary of the adoption of the 13th Amendment to our Constitution guaranteeing the enjoyment of equal freedom to all men. If I had a dream to once be Richard R. Wright, I would say to all my free children, despite being a slave born in Dalton, Georgia on May 16th, 1855, I still use my freedom to become a prominent African-American pioneer of my trade. Our freedom, as the minority in a racially tense majority, nation is not always equal, but is freedom nonetheless. The Emancipation Proclamation signed by Abraham Lincoln release the principles, concepts, and ideologies of freedom, which release some slaves from the bondage of cruel and unjust slavery. And with the elevation of the sacred and precious word of freedom, the Emancipation Proclamation was not enough to be stated as freedom for all who share the barren stripes of bondage and solitude, created by the demonic and evil name which we state today as slavery. So it was made official and carried as such and named the 13th Amendment, which abolished all forms of slavery and involuntary servitude. The eradication and the abolishment of the ideologies of slavery was a long and treacherous battle to reach a solution that could have been resolved without politics as well as politicians. It is a word which we call freedom, which we have won the long battle, but we still have a vigilant war that is still approaching. It is a freedom that pronounces hope for the hopeless. It is freedom that strengthens the eye of opportunity in the storm of oppression. It is the freedom that prepared the steaming hot plate of virtue for our generations to come. It is the idea of freedom that allowed me, as a once youthful Richard Robert Wright, to pronounce a potent message to retired General Otis Howard for the curious Northerners, in which I said, "Sir, tell them we are rising. And with our freedom and with our opportunity, we will always continue to rise." Thank you.
I'm Dr. Lisa Yount, the director of the Right Attitude Program at Savannah State University. Here's the writing tip of the day.
I am Deanne Goins, a professional writing tutor at the SSU Writing Center, and I bring you the Right Attitude writing tip of the day. And a positive is a noun or noun phrase that renames another noun right beside it.
The Right Attitude Writing Tip of the Day is brought to you by the SSU Writing Center and the Office of the Quality Enhancement Plan. The Right Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative to enhance student learning by improving attitudes about writing. Visit the SSU Writing Center in Payne Hall to get assistance with your writing projects, and to learn more about how you can improve your writing attitudes and skills, visit qep.savannahstate.edu.
Welcome back to Writing Our History, Legendary SSU. We now turn to Professor Pat West, who is both a faculty member in the Department of English Languages and Cultures, as well as a Savannah State alumna. Professor West has a love of both history and writing, and she often combines the two in creating assignments for her students. In the following interview, Professor West encourages us to find our connections to history, to reflect, and to develop a critical consciousness that will help us to move forward and create positive change in the world as authors of the history that is to come. The interview was conducted by SSU student and QEP intern Courtney Jones.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Courtney Jones, and today we have Professor West. So, Professor West, this year marks the 125th year of a legendary past. Tell us about your connection to the history of Savannah State University, as well as how many years you've been associated with that history and in what roles.
Well, Courtney, thank you very much for having me here on the program today. And that question would take quite a while to answer, but I'll try to fill in. My association with Savannah State actually started almost 40 years ago. Next year, the class of 1976, of which I am a proud member, will celebrate its 40th reunion anniversary. And as a student, I came here as a scared, timid young girl, 17 years old, out of high school, a new graduate, and had to be literally walked around by my cousin who had already graduated, Mr. Leroy West, and to actually show me buildings, how to get started on financial aid, to introduce me to key people here on campus, to sort of keep an eye on me. And so that started my role as a student, as a work-study student, major in the program of English Language and Literature. I was one of the first students in the program for Mass Communications, which was a minor at the time. Professor Charles Elmore, now Dr. Charles Elmore, started that program with our class in the mid-70s. And so there were a number of things. I worked on the Tiger's Roar, on the Student Yearbook Committee. I also ran unsuccessfully for student government president, but it was a great lesson in campus politics and community service, and I enjoyed that as well. And so there were a lot of lessons. Where else could I would have to mention also my activity, always involved in something. And during that time, Savannah State was being threatened. Perhaps that's a harsh word, but threatened with merging with a nearby university. We thought it was very important that the identity, the history of Savannah State College at that time be maintained as a historically Black college. And I was one of the one of the students who helped to organize our protest against that. And so it was a very good, I would say, 40 years. And so I've gone from student to quiet student to activist, and now to a full-time permanent faculty member.
Now, from my understanding, you are now the coordinator of the Richard Wright Freedom Day celebrations at Savannah State University. Would you mind explaining how that came about?
Well, serendipity, I guess, chance. A few years ago, we lost Dr. Haynes Walton Jr., who was a part of that legendary past of Savannah State College. Phenomenal scholar in the social sciences, in history, in politics. He left Savannah State and went on to the University of Michigan. We got word that Dr. Walton had passed away unexpectedly, as far as I know. And that we did organize, Dr. Jamal Touré and others organized a memorial to him in front of Hayne Hall. And I was curious about what Dr. Walton had been doing since he left from here, and I also wanted to go back and reflect on some of his writings. And so I came across an article that he had written with Dr. Kenneth Jordan and a few others, Dr. Modibo Kadali, who was here on the faculty at the time. They had done a study of National Freedom Day. And I must admit, Courtney, that I was not familiar with that celebration. And then to see all of the references to our major, Richard Robert Wright, founder, first president of Savannah State, or rather Georgia State College, Industrial College for Colored Youth for 30 years, to see his role in bringing that commemoration about. And that set me on a research journey. At the same time, we had a Fall Institute, and our president, Dr. Dozier, had pointed out her theme for the year, and she said something about getting it right. And I did a play on words as an English person, and I said, well, maybe that will be my theme, my focus for teaching the composition classes this semester. And so I came up with, I started thinking that day, and Dr. David Smith got up and said something about Richard Wright and how we would focus on honoring him during that upcoming year. I think it was 2013. And I realized that, they're celebrating National Freedom Day all over the country. In some places, I think even outside of the U.S. In all of my research, I saw nothing that pointed to a celebration here at Savannah State University. And so, I guess being a little bold, I stood up during the Fall Institute and suggested that we start a celebration here of National Freedom Day. And I think there was consensus, and I just took it from there. Luckily, with the support of Dr. David Smith and others here on the campus, Professor Alex Barr helped me to organize the program. And that was that very first year. We had participation from the NROTC units. We just had cooperation across the board. We had students we had that program organized. Student Affairs also was a partner with us, and it ended with a commemorative wreath that we laid at the bust of Richard Wright in front of Wright Hall. So it was a wonderful way to make learning in the classroom real, authentic assessment, because I tied that celebration to readings that we had in our textbook at the time. And as you look through all of the scholarly work on Richard Wright, the speeches that he had done himself, if you look back at that way that National Freedom Day was formed, the big ideas are liberation, cultural identity, social consciousness, civil rights, and critical thinking. All of those come out of that legacy of Richard Robert Wright. And in the classroom, I think it's important that as instructors here on this campus, steeped in history of persons like Richard Wright, a former slave who came out of bondage and just achieved so many things. And so we can do that when we're pulling and connecting Wright to people like Paulo Freire on critical consciousness. We can do that by looking at the writings of Haynes Walton and Dr. Modibo Kadali, Dr. Kenneth Jordan. And all of those would be available in our databases, readily available for students to read and connect. I think it's very important. We can't say that we want students to be independent and critical thinkers and not expose them to those readings that are going to raise consciousness. They have to be able to follow in the footsteps of a Richard Wright. Not perhaps on the same level. They may not be instrumental in bringing about legislation, but I think it starts within their own dorm rooms, within their own homes, where they are, within their families. And they should start to reflect on those values that we want to instill in them here at Savannah State.
Well, thank you, Professor West, for your time. It is very apparent that you care about your students, and we hope to have more professors such as yourself for the next 125 years.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yes.
But, you know, I have to give credit where credit is due, and it's not all me. So honor goes much higher. And I thank you for having me on the program today, Courtney. Ms. Jones.
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome back. We're talking about Writing Our History, Legendary SSU. Our next interview comes from Dr. Jamal Touré, who is, like Professor West, both an alum and a faculty member at Savannah State University. Dr. Touré, also a tour guide with Day Clean Journeys, has developed a wealth of knowledge about the history of Savannah, SSU, and the Gullah Geechee culture. We hope that his interview inspires you to make efforts to preserve your own history through writing, by documenting your life and taking control of your story. I had the pleasure of conducting this enlightening interview.
Hi, my name is Sierra Waltz, and I'm the Student Communications Outreach Intern here at the QEP, and today we have a special guest. His name is Jamal Touré, and he's a professor of African American history and Geechee Gullah history here at Savannah State University. He's a proud alumnus of SSU, and he shows that he loves his SSU each and every day by giving back to our campus community by sharing his knowledge and experience about Savannah State University. Without further ado, I would like to welcome Mr. Jamal Touré with us today. How are you doing?
Doing excellent. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
There's one correction.
Okay.
Well, we just don't do it here on the campus community.
Yes.
So even people who know me come to our tours, because we have our tour company.
Day Clean Journeys.
Right, Day Clean Journeys. Every time we're at First African Baptist Church, they hear me going, talking about the blue and orange, Savannah State University. So folks go, oh my God, what is this right here? He's talking about Savannah State constantly. Because it's all about sharing the pride and sharing the history.
Right.
So I do that to you and my favorite people, too.
Okay. So. Now, could you start off by sharing with us maybe when you first started to develop an interest in Savannah State University's history?
Good question. Coming here, and I should say that a part of the love came from family. From family and family members who had gone to Savannah State, who had gone, and they were role models to me. So understand that when I wanted to go to college, that hey, Savannah State, because Savannah State had this lore, had this aura about it that was mysterious to me. So again, so that, you know, seeing that blue and that orange, seeing that bright orange, that did something for me. And being from this area, I'm like, okay. So then coming here and then being around people who I had read about in newspapers, Dr. Otis Johnson, former Mayor Otis Johnson, Ben Pianchi, and I'm like seeing people. So now I'm here on the campus. I'm like, wow. But then what got me even more so is now being able to have the conversations with them.
Mm-hmm.
Having a conversation, not just from the family side, but now having these people who are like almost legendary. Then what occurred, because when I was at Savannah State, well, I had a double major.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to decide what area I was going to go into on the social sciences. And so finally I said political science. And so some people said, oh yeah, Dr. Walton, you're going to get Dr. Walton. And I'm like, okay, I heard about what everybody told me how Dr. Walton was, that he was all this. And my attitude was like, what? You know, that means? What is he, you know? So when I first sat in his first class, it was like, bam, all the information that came out, I said, oh, this is real. This is what they were saying about him, saying his intellect, again, just his story. And he was not pretentious, he was real. And then I saw with him the love that he had for Savannah State. And basically that became my mentor, and that began to move me to want to then also want to know more and do more. And then later on, even when I left Savannah State, then I'm at Mercer in law school, and then find out other information. They said, yeah, Walton is the A, B, C, and D. You know, I'm like, wow. And I come back home, and I come sit down, go by his office, sit down with him. He's like, yeah, so. He said, Mr. Touré, so. I'm like, okay. And that just basically became natural. Then knowing about the library, Asa Gordon. Name Asa Gordon. Understanding his history too. I'm like, I'm at the library, I'm like, wait a minute, Asa Gordon. Then I said, wait a minute. So I heard something about him. Then I'm starting to realize the connection to Savannah State. So I'm like, okay. Then later on, Louis Lomax, right. I was like, look, I talked about it in the class.
Right.
You know, then found Louis Lomax has a connection to Savannah State. And now I'm like looking at all this right here, because what I do often, I like to weave stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring the pieces together. And that's one thing people say, Jamal, you always, what we think of some disconnected pieces, you bring it together, that sometimes we don't realize the connection. And so that caused me to have that fondness understanding how unique this place is. And then later on, go and deal with the second president of Savannah State and knowing people down in Valdosta. And I say, hey, you all familiar with Magnolia High School? They say, oh, that was the old high school there. And I said, the second president of Savannah State was the principal of Magnolia High School. So again, all that right there, and that just, you know, it was like a volcano, you know, in a good way. It was the eruption of all that.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So to tap back into what you said about Savannah State's uniqueness, what particular factors or traits about Savannah State University promotes the true essence of HBCU life?
It's a range of them. It's a range, and I'll go backwards and then come forward and to see how our institution, say how Savannah State has played a role with Garson, not just here locally, but on national scales also and in a statewide scale. That I'm just going to deal with the first president of Savannah State, Major Richard R. Wright. Mm-hmm. And just like I deal with people who come from Howard. And some of them come, they have this attitude like, you know, we're Howard, so. Yeah. And I deal with a number of them. And then I said, oh, yeah, I said, General O.O. Howard met our first president. And they look like, what? I'm like, yeah. I said, then Richard R. Wright was a young boy, General O.O. Howard, charge of the Freedmen's Bureau. I said that he then comes and asks this little African boy, you know, what should we tell the people of the North? Mm-hmm. And that's when Richard R. Wright says, tell them we're rising, which becomes a poem. And so they're not looking like, oh, really? I said, yes. I said, General O.O. Howard, whom Howard is named for, is basically BAM, mm-hmm. connected to Savannah State via our first president. And so with regard to that, and then Wright, then also being a person who is an intellectual, then also an activist, and that with regard to him taking positions that, again, we need to fight for equal rights and secure civil rights here in this area, human rights in this area, and social justice. I respected that, because again, I'm saying, I go and look and say, wow, this is the line that I'm a part of. Mm-hmm. Then when I see Dr. Monroe Work, who will later leave from Savannah State, but he's here at Savannah State, then goes to Tuskegee. And then when we know about the lynchings and all of that, it came from Monroe Work, whom Wright and others understood the relationship. Because again, I say, here you go, these intellectual giants here in American history, all understanding, looking at our first president, saying, we need to be in that atmosphere with him. That even Booker T. Washington later on will go and realize that, wait a minute, Georgia State has Work over there, and he's doing his work, and he's a sociologist. He's like, Work. We're going to open up an institution that's going to be tied to looking at the black experience on an annual basis. Would you come from Georgia and come to Alabama, to Tuskegee? Work says yes, and that's again, and by the time I say, like he was here, that Wright and others understood having those intellectual giants right here at Savannah State in our midst, that you got Mary McLeod Bethune, and all these folks coming through here, traveling through here, part of our scene, but I go and say, many of us not understand that. So that's why I say for some of us, people like myself, we have that obligation to share it so that folks understand, as I say, the magnificent atmosphere that's here. And I keep going on down the line. Then I say, even just come to the 60s. And as I throw out the folks, it's like with Louis Lomax. I say, Lomax is the one that bring Malcolm X to the scene. It is Louis Lomax. He is the one that is the conduit for Mike Wallace, for them now to have that contact with Malcolm. So Malcolm now comes on the scene. So I might look up again, somebody from Savannah State. And when I throw that out to folks, you can see how some people who, man, thought, for Savannah State was this little HBCU, you know, sleepy Savannah, they start looking like, you can see them start leaning back and they're like, okay, yeah. It just, and some, even this weekend, people say, yeah, we slept on the school. Now I understand that, Jamal, we didn't realize Savannah State's connection. I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Even E.K. Love, who's right, who's a friend with Major Richard R. Wright, helping with God's establishment of other school, HBCUs. And again, all right here. I'm not going to tell people, I say, that's what it's about. And then I have to go and say, even my time as a student, that when I was in student government, we would go to the student, the SAC conference, Student Advisory Council for Board of Regents. And the Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs said something to me that the moment I just looked at him at that time and we were talking, so Dr. McDonald said, he said, Jamal, he said, out of all the institutions in the university system of Georgia, Savannah State has been the most politicized of all the institutions. So I'm standing with now the Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs, and so we're having this conversation. And I'm listening to him saying, out of all of them, talking about UGA, Medical College of Georgia, Georgia Tech, people are going to say Georgia State Times, all of them, they're saying Savannah State. Then I reflected on, I thought about Bobby Hill, who was a state senator, who some people said was the third most powerful man in the state of Georgia at one time. graduate of Savannah State, or Savannah State alum from the 1960s. Then I'm looking at when there is a talk of merger at Savannah State, how Tony Brown Journal came down here, and there's a march of Savannah State students. I'm talking about hundreds of Savannah State students from the gym, from the old gym, that, well, not the old, from the Wiley Wilcox Gymnasium, going down Victory Drive, and that hits national media right there showing, and the folks, the students are doing, and as you see the students all together. And I said, I understand where McDonald's coming from now, because it has been that legacy that has been at Savannah State. And then even when we come into the 90s and 2000s, when people are going to say, oh, with the student protest. But then you see it was student protest at Morris Brown, at Howard, and other schools, non-HBCUs, also current. But students are now saying, wait a minute, we have to change the dynamics here. And students at Savannah State, as I shared, folks, they were focused on not saying partying, they're saying conditions here. And I tell folks, it is directly related to, even today when I talk to folks in the classes, in my class, that's why I go and say at the tail end of the class, I say, what you all looking at, the buildings that are here at Savannah State right now, this class that you all taking right now, came directly from the students. It was not the administrators, and it was not the faculty, it was the students were the ones. The students that said, here we are at an HBCU, we don't even have classes on our history. Now, here, we had an HBCU. So that's why that class came directly from the students. And the buildings that we see here now, basically tied to the students pushing that forward, because what had happened prior to that in the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, Dr. Haynes Walton had been the person at Savannah State that had been pushing the Board of Regents, saying that you all have been treating HBCUs disparately here in Savannah State. You've not been getting the funding. And so that was, and now I'm like looking and saying, it's all part of that continuation. I said, all part of that legacy. Then when I go on to something after today, people now celebrate, or people have been celebrating, then they stop celebrating. But on Hilton Head Island, they continue. National Freedom Day came directly from the inspiration of our first president, Savannah State University, Major Richard R. Wright. So all that right there, I couple all that together just in a small way with people, and because we know there are other layers, that people are going to say, wow. This school, we may not have viewed Savannah State like Howard or Morehouse or FAM or North Carolina A&T or Cheney or Wilberforce, but now when it comes down to it, after I get through with them or some of them and throwing stuff out there, they now take that, they puff that chest up. The Tigers.
That was really interesting to know how those connected with this area. In closing, do you have any message that you want to leave with our listeners as far as the importance of keeping this history going from generation to generation as they enter and leave Savannah State University?
Always, and I'm sure this almost a daily basis, because when you don't tell your story, it gets displaced. And when it gets displaced, guess what? People then function as if they have no story. And then because they have no story, then it also goes against their self-esteem. So I'll let people understand, I say history equals self-esteem. That when you have a good concept of your history, guess what? You feel good about yourself. You know that pretty much you're going to say there's nothing that you cannot achieve. You know what you can do, because you're going to say, hey, my people did this before, I can do this right here. You have that line. You have that legacy. And when you feel like you have no ownership to history, guess what? People can come and tell you that you're anything. They can tell you that you're ignorant, you're stupid, you can't achieve. And guess what? You ingest and take that in. And then what you do, too, you then regurgitate and give it to other people. And so everybody feeds off of that. But when you feed off of greatness, that you're gonna shine. And so now it ain't gonna be a feed, because people gonna see the light coming from you. They're gonna say, I want some of that light too. And I tell people, that's why you have to know your story, so that way you would not get displaced, or story gets displaced, and then somebody else come and tell you something that again gives you a false foundation. I just use this as an example that just 2 points. In Savannah, there is a public housing development that is actually a replica of a plantation. Most people don't realize that. And people, when I point this out to folks, they're gonna say, Jamal, do the people living out here know this? I said, no. I say, it doesn't matter what your socioeconomic level in Savannah, political leaders, educational leaders, spiritual leaders, financial leaders, no one knows, not even understand. I said, but psychologically, what are they doing? They sending a message to these folks, that, and to others, that this is all that you all are, this is all that you shall be. Mm-hmm. And many of them function like that. Now we talk about the issues going on here in Savannah. Then I say, again, this is about story. People talk about the Underground Railroad in Savannah. They create a mythology about it. But I tell about that. Are two people specifically tied to the Underground Railroad in Savannah, the second one in Savannah, it's a man and a woman. Who we know?
I said, guess what? They were the ones who helped people get their freedom, actually, at Fort Pulaski and Hilton Head Island. I said, they have descendants living in Savannah right now and in southern South Carolina. I said, but guess what? Their great-great-grandchildren don't know anything about it. And their children are now walking around here without having any understanding of the greatness of their ancestors and the valor that they showed. And people look at that when I share this, they're like, wow. And I tell you, that's why it's important for us to share our story. As we're going to say, we say, Say World War, Athena, Sankofa, Ayinke. So most people know about Sankofa, but they don't know the full phrase. It's Say World, Athena, Sankofa, Ayinke, which means go back into your past and reclaim that which has been misplaced. But once you do that, guess what? Your foundation is set, and you can then soar and go wherever you want. That's why I tell people in my classes, I said, listen, I see the greatness in you. And I walk around here every day, and I'm like marveling. I'm like, I'm around great people. I said, some of them are going to do some great things. They're going to be mind-blowing. I'll be like, I was in that atmosphere with them. And why I say that? Because that means that I'm going to get a part of that light from them. And I'm going to be able to share with somebody. I said, I was there when she did that. I was there when he did that. And just, like, so I can get a little bit of light, too. And as I share with you and other people in the class, when y'all do great things, y'all supposed to look out for me, because if not, I'm going to be on TMZ saying, hey, listen, I took care of their children, and they're not doing anything for me right now, so let them know that. And I'm like, I told you. But again, we expect great things, and I always want people to understand their greatness.
Well, thank you for sitting down with us and doing this interview on behalf of the QEP. We thank you for sharing your knowledge with us and our listeners today. So thank you for coming.
Glad to be here.
You just heard part of our interview with Dr. Jamal Touré. To close out our show, we will play a recording of John Greenleaf Whittier's poem, Howard at Atlanta, as read by Jordan Ogden, who was an alumna, a former Miss SSU, and currently a career development specialist at Savannah State University. Whittier wrote this poem in 1869 after joining his friend Union General O.O. Howard in a visit to a school for African-American children in Atlanta. Whittier came away impressed after young Richard Wright delivered his now-famous message to those in the North, "Tell them we are rising." And Whittier immortalized those words in the following work, Howard at Atlanta.
My name is Jordan Rouse Ogden. I work as the Career Development Specialist in the Office of University Career Services. Howard at Atlanta. Right in the track where Sherman plowed his red furrow, out of the narrow cabin, up from the cellar's burrow, gathered the little black people with freedom newly dowered, where, beside their northern teacher, stood the soldier Howard. He listened and heard the children of the poor and long enslaved, reading the words of Jesus, singing the songs of David. Behold, the dumb lips speaking, the blind eyes seeing, bones of the prophet's vision warmed into being. Transformed, he saw them passing their new life's portal. Almost it seemed the mortal put on the immortal. No more with the beast of burden, no more with stone and clod, but crowned with glory and honor in the image of God. There was the human chattel, its manhood taking. There, in each dark brown statue, a soul was waking. The man of many battles, with tears his eyelids pressing, stretched over those dusky foreheads his one-armed blessing. And he said, who hears can never fear for or doubt you. What shall I tell the children up north about you? Then ran round a whisper, a murmur, some answer devising, and a little boy stood up, General, tell 'em we're rising. O black boy of Atlanta, but half was spoken. The slave's chain and the master's alike are broken. The one curse of the races held both in tether. They are rising, all are rising, the black and white together. O brave men and fair women, ill comes of hate and scorning. Shall the dark faces only be turned to mourning? Make time your sole avenger. All healing, all redressing, meet fate halfway and make it a joy and a blessing.
This marks the conclusion of our special episode of The Writer's Way, looking at Writing Our History, Legendary SSU. Thank you for tuning in and learning more about the history of Savannah State University. We hope that you take away an increased appreciation for the role that writing has to play in the preservation of our history. SSU has 125 years of legendary history behind it, and it will be our students today and in the future who will write what history is yet to be. Don't forget that you can listen to all of the Right Attitude radio shows by visiting the Quality Enhancement Plan website, qep.savannahstate.edu. I wish to thank those who helped make this show possible, including Ann Ogden, Enal Ayuk, Jamal Torre, Jordan Ogden, Kiera Lewis, Pat West, Courtney Jones, Sonia Compton, as well as the QEP's own Adriana de Oliveira and Lisa Yant. A special thanks to Ryan Clark for his help in production and Grace Curry at WHCJ. I'm your host, Sierra Walton. Have a pleasant day and tune in soon for another episode of The Writer's Way.